Great crowd. Thanks so much for coming to Bible class today. We had Dr. Weiss here yesterday, and we had 41 folks come and listen to him talk about topics in bioethics. Today, Dr. Weiss is going to be talking about creation and evolution debate. We did videotape, and Miller videotaped the session we had yesterday, and we are going to be making a number of DVDs of that available to you all. If you want to get that, if you would, I would love to know if you really are interested in that. Contact me, find me, or call me at home, and we can get Luann to make a number of those copies. If you want to see that, then you'd be great. You can get a hold of me. So, to introduce Dr. Weiss is here from our Concordia St. Louis Seminary, and he is pastor of practical, I don't have it in front of me, practical
okay.
And what?
I create controversy and then leave.
Okay. That's a good way to put it. Practical theology, is that what it's called?
Yeah, it's good.
Practical theology.
Very good. C+.
C+, good. That's good. And before that, Pastor Weiss received his master's and PhD here at U of I in the medicine department, working in areas of blood diseases in lambs, right, in sheep. And his undergraduate was done at Eastern, and then went from there to Wayne State. Is that right? Taught at Wayne State
Medical School.
And from there, they went to Concordia Lutheran Seminary to become a pastor. And then he was a pastor at Bunker Hill, Illinois. And that's where his family and my family became really good friends. My dad is a pastor about 10 minutes away from there in Dorsey, Illinois. And we knew him also before when he was in Evansville. And then became pastor at Springfield, Our Savior Lutheran in Springfield, and then took the job as professor at Concordia Lutheran Seminary. And thank you, Bob, for coming, and take over.
Okay. I was at Springfield for 7 years. I've been to seminary since 1992, and with all that behind me, I'm 105 years old, so I just need a lot of food for observers. Do it. Yesterday after we finished, I went out and ran north. I didn't know where I was going. But I got hit by about 6 cars, 3 people. Man, I was busy out there, way up there on Neal Street, North Neal. Then I took a long way to see some of the old stuff where my wife was going to graduate school. That's IRC. Baptized Andrew and Suzanne when we were here from 1969 to 1972. So it's nice to be back here. God's word with you. Well, this is not a very long presentation. This is sort of a beginning of a very difficult issue for some people about creation and evolution. I always make my trips to Barnes and Noble or Borders every day, well, not every day, every week. I have my classes that I teach in bioethics, studies in creation, genetics, environmental ethics, a graduate class in contemporary issues and ethics. And they have to write letters to the editors. So I mentioned this yesterday, and the students in bioethics do that. And all of them have been published. So I always encourage people to write letters to the editor. And in this environment, especially in the area of embryonic stem cell research, it really would be this kind of picnic. Because I am finding that the Postal Dispatch won't publish. They publish mine, and the people at Washington University come out and tell me I'm disingenuous. Then I write in a rebuttal scientifically, and they don't publish it. You know, that's kind of how it goes. So, but that's, you may still have to stand up for what you believe. That's. So in this presentation here, it's pretty straightforward about Darwin. There are a lot of things happening in the area, certainly in biology books. I always encourage the fellows to leave the seminary to wherever they go to purchase a biology book, elementary, high school, and college, if they're in a town-gown situation like this. So that they know, the students that are in high school, grade school, college, elementary, they have this high school biology book, they're available. So if they have any questions, they can talk about the subjective language, the language that says, well, you know, it's sort of what it says, because some of the science in many of these biology books isn't, to be quite frank, terribly accurate. And all you have to do is sit down and read them and go through them and study them to find this out. We did this with all the science books at Trinity Edwards ago where I was. Two other PhDs in biochemistry and I sat down and actually read through the science books to see what was going on and what they were teaching. We found a lot of errors, just in basic science. Now we can go up and say, you know, we just kind of were interested in what's going on. So, I don't know if they were honest errors or sort of premeditated, but nonetheless, those things happen. So this whole area of creation evolution, in fact, I just brought this with me. I haven't had a chance to go through all of this, but National Geographic, The Lost World of the People. And, of course, I kept the receipt as a fact production. I'm going to reference some of this in here because the things that I look at are the things that they say in this in an objective way. Is this the way it is? Is that the language they use? Is this objective language the language of Darwin? The language of the Big Bang? And it certainly isn't. But yet everybody believes that's the way it is. I'm not saying that you can't have dinosaurs and pterodactyls and things like that. We know they all existed. But even the carbon dating system that they use in here, they date everything around the bones that they find, therefore the bones are that old. And they even admit in here that they don't have, you know, the original amount of carbon-14 or carbon data, even if they use potassium, argon, or argon. They don't know the original amount because they say it changes. And I'm thinking, boy, you guys just shot yourself in the foot on this one. But people still believe it. So there's some things I want to point out. Some of this, I know some of the younger people here might think this is going to go right over your head. All I'm interested in doing is sharing some words with you to help structure your thinking. To give you at least my beginning viewpoint on this. As a scientist, some people say, how can you be a Christian, a pastor, a teacher at a Lutheran seminary, and have a PhD in science? For a lot of people, that doesn't mix. I got a senior graduate school degree, which you don't get if you want to survive. Because I took a class in ecology, and I was very respectful, but I answer the questions, and I'd write a little note. Well, don't write notes on the test book. Take the test, take your grade, and move on. And I went and talked to the professor, and that didn't work out very well either. So I said, well, I got a book, and in the prelims from the doctoral here, my researcher, I don't know what to do now, they really went after me on this. And I just told them, Norman Levine from the veterinary school was my advisor, and he kind of slept through the first part of it. And he was Jewish, and he believed in the in the Torah. And he said, I think this is enough. That ended that issue and went on to other things. So, okay, I'm going to go on with this. You can see Darwin up here. Remember that is a picture, a life picture of the world that he created, the moon. And here is Lucy. She's about, supposedly about 1.2 years, 2 million years old. We have a picture of her in the zoo in St. Louis. She's about, I don't know, maybe 4 or 5 inches. Hair all over her body. Now, where did they get the hair? I'll show that to you in a minute. Okay. But now it's working. See, yesterday this little toy wouldn't work. So now it's working. Darwin says, analogy would lead me one step further, namely to believe that all animals and plants have descended from one prototype. Therefore, I should infer, remember this word in preference, from analogy that probably all, here's probably, all of the organic beings that have lived on the earth have descended from some one primordial form into which life was first breathed. I'm teaching a class now, Studies in Creation. This is the first time I've had the students read Origin of Species. This passage, they go out, oh, the RD says this. Have you read it? Well, no. Now you mean, oh, gee, this is worse than reading Luther. I mean, this guy's something else. Well, there you have it. Probably an inference is a big thing in the area of paleoanthropology, the study of humans, and how they, quote-unquote, descended from a common ancestor. It's common ancestor talk. Not so much that you hear, we descended from old world monkeys, the ones without the tails. It's just because their evolution is at the end, our evolution is at the end, we're only becoming more perfect, because because we all came from a common ancestor. And I was asked this when I was in California last week, prosecuting attorney asked me, he said, well, isn't evolution based on simple to complex? I said, yes. He said, well, I did a postdoc in cell biology after 11 years. He said, well, what did you find in the cell? I said, man, it's really complex. We don't know all about this cell. It is terribly complex, one body cell. Very complex. So if we came from simple to complex, he said, doesn't that sort of like, now this is the attorney, there's probably some attorneys in there. You know, he's saying, this doesn't make sense to me. If we came from something simple to complex, we already start off complex. And that is true. So these are just statements out of biology books. I'm not going to read through all of these, but when I go through biology books, this is what I find. And I find statements like the theory that species change over time, genetic, the survival of the fittest, variations, genetic change. This is genetics, the use of genetics in Darwin now it's not complicated, it's called neo-Darwinism, new Darwin. That's the issue of mutations. Mutations, of course, remove information. But my question, this is Dawkins one time was asked, well, how do you get from space if information is basically removed, you know, mutations? And he said, nothing. They don't know. You can't get in, quote unquote, species by removing information and having mutations. So Darwin proposed natural selection and so forth. The study of how modern organisms have descended, earliest form. These are all in biology books. And this is what all of us younger people are reading, and this has been going on for a long time. Even the Scopes trial. I have a student study the Scopes trial on Wednesday Mind and Darryl and all that stuff, and how that went about. And the man, of course, who was a football coach, was teaching evolution, he was fined $100. The case was eventually thrown out by the Supreme Court. Process, this is, you know, current species, including humans, had evolved from earlier ones, and that any two species have common ancestors. This is out of a magazine called Philosophy Now that I get. I'm not a philosopher. I get this because they talk about bioethics and science. It comes from England. But some of these, modern biology, Reinhardt, Winston, they all talk about how we seem to be natural selection, survival of the fittest. My in-laws, dairy farmers, and you see this happen. I mean, there is natural selection. There is, you know, the strong, only the strong survive. It was a song. When I was here at the University of Illinois, they had places like Chances Are and Brown Jug and Brown Bottle. We used to go in and watch, we used to watch REO Speedwagon, you know, for nothing. Sit back, have popcorn, and a roof for beverage. So, now, you can always tell who is in charge that's sort of imbibing the fruit of the vine. Because they understand what fruit and beverage is all about. Neo-Darwinism, I'm not going to go, this is of course genetics. Positive mutations are there, Darwinism, evolution will be slow and gradual process. And that's why, in terms of the origin of the universe called cosmogony, that they have, I've read some magazines that posit the universe is 42 billion years old. It has to be 42 billion years old for all of this to happen. And in fact, in this magazine, they even made the same statement. Well, this has to happen. We have to have these long ears for these small hominids to survive and make it to the small island where they were located. And, I can spend a whole hour on that book. Okay. So this is just, you know, this is just use of genetics and things like that. Because molecular evolution is a big thing, the study of how, because everybody has base pairs, four base pairs in here, so they have, you know, trees, leaves. So it makes sense that we all came from a common ancestor. I look at this theologically, and it says, in the beginning God created the heavens and the earth, and the earth was now a formless and void. That's tohu bohu. I always put that on my license plate, tohu bohu. Formless and empty. Of course, my five daughters always have something to say about that. And darkness covered the face of the surface of the deep, and the Spirit of the Lord hovered over the face of the waters. And God created all of this, but he didn't put it in the same order, of course, as the Big Bang puts it in. This is 6 days, and the seventh day he set back and rested in the Sabbath and his rest. So this is totally different. Totally different. And he did all of this in his work. He's the author. He's the subject. Now, this subjectivism for... these are all just taken... This is taken out of a college anthropology book. Anthropology. Study of how we came to be. It's a great book to read. It's very thick. It's very heavy. You know, kind of the U-haul carried around. And subjectivism is, to me, something that's very vague, not absolute, not concrete. The Bible is very concrete. In the third verse of Genesis, it says, and the Hebrew is very good here, and God said, now this NIV says, let there be light. The Hebrew literally says, let light be, and light was. And what this means is that there was no light, and in the Hebrew syntax, and how it's used here, the word, let light be. It means there was no light before. It just appeared as he spoke. I mean, that's really clear in the Bible. There was no light, and God said, let light be. And it came. And light was. And so here you have just what they tapped into Darwin. They infer. Things are fragmentary. These are estimates. Probably. It is not as clear. And in biology books, they will tell you, and this is not, I'm just telling you what they say, this is not my opinion. They will say to you, this is the best evidence we have. This is the best we can offer. For example, in this book here, we have to mark some of this here. Nice picture here. Could this be the face? Well, we'll find out. Okay, let's see.
What month and year is
it? This is April 2005. Just came out. I just stopped off the Borders Art Fair someplace out in the weeds in the Arbolo. Okay, they talk about somehow, they don't know how, but somehow they crossed the ocean. And this is probably a human. Let's see. The name, of course, is Homo floresiensis. May have evolved. We don't know. May have evolved. They question that. And we know that when evolutionary pressures change, some species responded by shrinking. That's what we believe. We think that's true. Okay. And yet, strangest of all, she lived practically yesterday. Radiocarbon dating of charcoal pieces found next to the skeleton, together with luminescent dating that indicated when the surrounding sediments were last exposed to the sun, revealed her about 18,000 years of age. By mid-2004, our evacuation of the Sliang Bois, this is south of Malaysia, by mid-2004, our excavation had yielded bones and so forth, from about 95,000 until recently, 13,000 years ago. Homo floresiensis, her kind, probably evolved. Her ancestors may have stood several feet taller at first, but over hundreds of thousands of years of isolation on Flores, they dwindled in size. The Hobbit, they call her, a whole new kind of human. Share your thoughts. Now, you can go to websites, and perhaps modern humans, here's what it is. They show a picture of this. They show a picture here. Welcome, little people. I saw you sitting up there on the right. Well, I appreciate it. Yeah, you paid good attention. Very good. We're talking about evolution. Y'all, how y'all came from monkeys. You come from a monkey? You come from a monkey? Yes or no? Do you eat a banana? Monkeys do. Okay. What they say here is, now this is interesting. My point is this. They draw the pictures, they make it like this is real, because people have been reading that. It's a great magazine, National Geographic. And what they say here is perhaps modern humans meet their ancient neighbors before something spelled the end for these little people. Imagine, here is it, it says an imagined encounter between a modern human and a tiny forest human. 40,000. It's imagined. But if you put in here, my point is this. reading. I mean, they're not even doing good science. This is not good science. Any scientist ought to tell you that. This is not good science. To sit here and say, could be perhaps, back it up with data. Use a scientific method, back it up. Well, this just goes on. And it says here, Homo erectus may have reached, but they don't know. They could have been meat eating, but we're not sure. And then they say here, working in clay, an artist added skin, muscle, eyes to cast the skulls in the Republic of Georgia. Discoveries there are fleshing out, and so they add all this stuff to it. I'm not saying this can't be done because we have some great sophistication in forensic pathology these days that can help find a lot of people that are missing. But that's what this is in terms of subjective language. Okay, moving right along. And here it is. This is out of National Geographic about 4 years ago, and here's what they say. Over the vast reach, this is Australopithecus afarensis. I'd like to be a name. Hey, afarensis, would you come and fix the dishes? You know. Okay. You can see why my grandkids, when I approach them, they run. Okay. For these reconstructions, artist Jay Matternis. Now, he's in here, actually. He has a story in here of how he does all of this stuff. His face on the front, how they put the hair and everything on. Extensive knowledge of anatomy, flesh out fragmentary skin, remains, bathed, fully muscled adult males. He has speculated on skin tone and amount of the body hair and its texture since fossils give no clue. With these characteristics relatively uniform, the artist has focused on the main area of change, the skull. Now, why do they put hair? They look back and they say, since we came from old world monkeys, a common ancestor, we had to have had hair on our body. But they have never found one. Now, they have found, mammoths, with some stuff, right? But they've never found any proto-human with hair, just a bunch of bones. But then they put the hair on. That's not science. Now, if they found a human skull of this current day, or maybe 100 or 200 years old, they would know because we have pictures and we have records. But there is no evidence, no matter how you cut the pie of evolution, that we, or supposedly came from people like this, have a lot of hair. I disagree with this approach, obviously. So, these are more comments. The earliest primates probably were arboreal. The archetype seems. So this is all, my point here is that the use of their words are not definitive words. And science deals with data, the collection of data. You know, you scientists here know about the scientific method and its history, and how valuable that is in science. And this doesn't fit it. And that's why we still have conflict in the world of origin of human beings. Because people don't want to read, certainly, what the Bible is and what God has to say, because it doesn't make sense as it could happen in 6 days. God's not saying, I'm writing this book to make sense for you. Okay. And so what do? On pictures, they put in search of human origin. You see what they do here. This is a gorilla. Okay? But they make it human by saying gorilla is human. See? So people look at this over the last 100 years, and this is always in the biology books, and so all of this continues to hit us. And so why wouldn't you believe this? You've had this stuff since preschool. I'll show you a dinosaur book, or a human embryo, or a Darwin book from preschool. And so how apes became human? Don't worry about him. What a new discovery tells scientists how our oldest ancestors stood on two legs and made an evolutionary leap into a tarpid. I don't see this. I mean, some of you are scientists here. I've looked at the skull. We study the skull structure in my classes. And it's interesting. They start off pretty big heads, and they should kind of get smaller over time. But they kind of start off big, and then they go small, then they get big. I personally think what they have discovered are monkey heads and human heads. And so what I see with all of the similarities in structures and in plants and animals is that this is God's way so that we, that he created, may survive. Can you imagine eating a piece of meat at McDonald's that didn't have the same code we have, well, we'd all be horizontal. It's just not going to work. So, but this stuff here is what I think young people need to be taught. You see this stuff and say, okay, that's what they're saying we came from. I mean, Planet of the Apes, I like science fiction. I watch that, the monkey business and jumping around. It's interesting. But look, you know, you look at this stuff and boy, they sure look human, don't they? But they're not human beings. So, confirmation bias. This is something that you need to take your high school biology class and ask your teacher. I'm not going to go over this because time is sharp. But what they do is they make judgments based on new data to be overly consistent with the preliminary hypothesis. Now that sounds difficult, but I'm going to go right to the picture here. What they say, they find procedures that will produce the desired relationship. Now, the theory is accepted first, evolution. Supporting evidence discovered and interpreted in the course of a determined effort to find the missing links. They had no missing links. Even Darwin in his book, even on his book on the origin of man, says we don't have them. Now that's something that they try and make you believe they have, but they have never found missing links. They would conclusively say, we have descended from old world monkeys, our common ancestors. It just hasn't happened. No matter what you see in National Geographic. And here's confirmation bias. They start off with birds, and they work backwards. Well, we have birds. Well, how do birds fly? Well, there must have been some dinosaurs that had scale-like structures. Well, I mean, Richard Dawkins, you meet some of these people, and what they do is this is how it works. I mean, this is serious. It takes millions of years, remember. Is that you have, and you look at birds, and you say, okay, let's find the dinosaurs that have scale-like structures and wing-like structures, and there are some that do. Well, how do they become birds? Well, this happened over millions of years. And the birds, just like in Jurassic Park, the first one, remember that? Where they're running and chasing, you know, and here comes the Tyrannosaurus Rex, you know. And they're going like this. So, and if the animals are running on their hind limbs and their front ones are going like this in gravity, you can imagine that over billions of years there would be some mutations and some adjustment due to the environment. They would adapt to that, and over billions of years, guess what the front forelimbs develop into? Wings! That's how squirrels came about, flying squirrels. And there's some interesting cartoons. A flying squirrel eventually kept jumping off a tree and falling to the ground dying. But over billions of years, they finally, because of adaptation to the environment, developed wedges between their forelimbs and hind limbs, so now they can fly. That's called confirmation bias. Now we know where we came from. Let's go back and find the evidence to fit us. It's something I have never seen written. I've only found one paper on it. And here's out of it, and I put the words up there. This came out of a book from Our Savior Lutheran Church in School. I paid for it. But this is a book that they had in the library, the school library, for preschool, kindergarten, first graders to kind of use. My recommendation for school is that you take all the science books and put them in the science teacher's room. That's my recommendation. But the science teacher can deal with the questions. They can deal with it. I don't know what you do here. That's just always. Okay. So this is how it works. So they look back. At least you got the name that's easy to pronounce. Homo erectus, and I'm all straight physics. And eat a banana and hush up. That's just my bad sense of humor here. Because this is confirmation bias. So this is how it happened. The Big Bang. There's no sound in outer space, in spite of Star Wars movies. There's no sound. It's just a big... Oh. And way back here, 10 to the minus 43 seconds, there was this explosion, or so, according to Alan Booth, MIT. Great scientist, great physicist. And he says, this is when it all began, but I can't tell you what happened before. And then at around 10 to the minus 34 seconds or so, you had this inflationary thing that starts right here and it explodes out. And from all this explosion, all the heat, and all the things that are going on, now you have the universe expanding in an ongoing process. And from that, of course, you have first the stars, the galaxies, the suns, and then someplace in here at about 4.6 billion to 6 billion, billion years ago, you have the Earth formed. And then the Earth was pummeled by meteorites and rockets, and it had a mist and all this caring life that we need, and you had since it was a boiling cauldron of hot water bubbling up from underneath. You've seen this on TV. All these bubbles, all the hot water in the ocean, and they find little bugs living around the hot water. I'm glad to do. But then they surmise, infer that we came from these single cell organisms from the water, and so forth. Over years, fish came to the land, and then developed legs over millions of years, and then on and on we go. And all of this happened between 12 to 20 billion years. Some biologists will talk about the three ways we came to be. One would be evolution. After the Big Bang, and the Big Bang was established basically in the 1930s by a guy, Georges Lemaître, a Frenchman, and a guy, Gamow, and they called it the cosmic seed, and all the stuff in this little tiny atom-sized particle is there to make what we are. And where did it come from? They don't know. So, but when you look at your biology books, you're going to see 4.6 to 6 billion, and then they're going to say humans came from theory of evolution, of course, from all this stuff that happened. And then they're going to say panspermia, I'll show you that in a minute, and they're going to say the myth of creation. Some do mention creation. When they do that, then you can go through that door. And here it is. See, Time and Newsweek, once or twice a year, always have something on creation. And here it is. You have all the meteorites hitting the earth, and here's life, and you think, 4.5 billion. You just kind of walk. This is the green brick road. You get here 600 million, you get some cells with nuclei. Finally, they develop. DNA sort of happens. And I'm just telling you what has been published by them. Suzuki, not the piano and violin guy. He's an incredible evolutionist. He says, look, I'm just telling you up front, this is all a mistake. This is all by chance. And I mean, I'm best quoting him. That's not my opinion. If it's a mistake and chance, well, it seems to me I can go back here in the Bible, and this is not a mistake and this is not a chance. God did it and happened. Well, they don't like that. Well, here you have all of the cosmology and all this kind of stuff, and here we are back here in front of this mammoth. Well, there's deistic evolution. Nobody can be an evolution and believe in God with the evolutionist like that. This is what Thomas Jefferson and a lot of the framers of the Constitution were. They just pissed out things that they didn't like about Christ. Pantheistic evolution, there's a true religion that is very much into this. And I won't mention any more about them. Panspermia, of course, cosmic ancestry. Get this movie, Mission to Mars. I use this in my classes. I use it in confirmation. I like movies in confirmation to get the students' attention for a while. But Mission to Mars shows panspermia. Extraterrestrial DNA. That's what it's all about. Watson Crick, a DNA fan of that. And you ever see all these people from Mars, they all look like Gumbies, different shapes, and they all look the same, tall or thin. That's what it is. So then of course, this is panspermia, the DNA got right here, seeding the whole universe. The cosmic ancestor, that's where you came from. Now, theory of evolution. Now, I thought theistic evolution, again, is oxymoronic. You can't be in it. Evolutionists can believe in God, but they like that. And that's all this is not complicated. It simply means God uses the Big Bang. God uses evolution in the evolution of man, like Adam and Eve. There was somebody that came out from the city of Rome and said that was okay back in 1996, believing this particular myth, or one of these theories, as long as you don't interrupt the deposit of faith, which is a Bible tradition. Science now. So it's all the point is death is natural in theistic evolution, but it's also in the theory of evolution. Death is natural. In the theology of the Bible, God's word is not natural. It's a result of sin. And so there are, God is Mr. Goodrich. He comes in to fix the problems of the world. He comes back and forth, back and forth. And a lot of people like theistic evolution because they think you can serve two masters. Answer to masters. I think maybe there's something in the Bible about that. And but this is what I find when I was at Our Savior's. There were some Lutherans that said this. Why not? Why not? Well, there's no evidence that the Bible teaches that. So why would you want to talk about this? Well, it makes sense. Well, God's not here to make sense. He's here to find the saving water to save souls. And here he has this diagram of this kind of shows how it comes together for a lot of people. It makes it comfortable. And this is where people want to be today in the world. They want to be comfortable. And intelligent design is a new theory. I'm not spending more time on the chart here. This, of course, is just to talk about, there's, when you come out here, sort of natural knowledge of God, you look at the universe and you say, this had to be designed by somebody. It could not have just happened by chance. Intelligent design, they do a great job in refuting the science of evolution. Michael Behe, Dembski, Thaxton, Philip Johnson, he's out in California now, he's been in a Darwin trial, defeating Darwinism. There's a great book out, it's a real thick book, it's a difficult book by Dembski called Mere Creation. They do a lot of good things in the field of science. Of course, the one thing they fall short on is to decide who is the intelligent designer. And the only problem I have with this is that it could be God, it could be Buddha, it could be Muhammad, it could be anybody. See? And so they say, we don't deal with the religion, we'll let people deal with that. And that's the weak link in the intelligent design theory. Some people, of course, in Kansas, they want this to be taught in high school. I personally think this goes back to the family. I think parents ought to be involved in dealing with sex education and talking to kids about it, and especially about how God created the universe. Now, not everybody agrees with that. I think there are places in schools, especially Christian schools, for some of this. But in high schools, you're always going to get evolution. Would I want somebody to teach creation? I personally wouldn't. I don't know what they're going to say. There's all kinds of variations of doctrine of creation out there. Would I want somebody to teach the theory of intelligent design? It is a theory. Yeah, as long as they stick to the science and don't get into poo-poo. But that's just kind of obvious, back in the weeds like a Pharisee, so I'm saying my thing. Okay. All right, on living, Darwin didn't intend to have natural selection. Item, human sociology. You know, parental care is a natural adoption shaped by natural selection. Everything is natural selection. The way you take care of parents, just look at the monkeys. That's the way they do it. Whatever is good will promote human flourishing. Abortion, genetic color, sex selection, euthanasia, surrogacy, on and on and on. That's where theistic evolution. Theistic evolution, sin is a blind alley, it goes nowhere, it's a mistake, and so you can have abortion. The embryo, therefore, is a developing form of human life. It's not a human being. It's a form. That's evolution talk. So, does it take just as much faith? I always like to ask this to students, to believe in the theory of evolution that does biblical creation. And not same faith, but people thinking that. Oh, they take just as much faith. No. Talk biblical faith over against human trust. They're different. So one has to be tuned into that, and is the theory of evolution of religions always debated, but they do have a belief system. Science and theology, they can sit in the same queue. Christian theology is not science, however. Science serves the knowledge of faith. And the major difference between science and theology, this is Dr. Paul Schrader, is what God says in the scriptures. He's the author. In relation to God, theology helps science to avoid two extremes, that the universe is God, and on the other hand, that the universe can be understood apart from God. So you study nature, go to Psalm 19. It's in the Bible. That's it. Now, this is just kind of a real rough beginning that will throw out a lot of stuff that a lot of the younger people have seen. Especially the pictures that are out there, this whole new thing that people are going to look at this picture. And in this particular front part here, it shows him putting all the makeup on, everything on this hobbit. And so people call it hobbit. Well, I've seen Lord of the Rings, I've read the books. My brother and I read those things about every 2 or 3 years. We talk about him, Audrey, he's a doctor from Chicago. And it's incredible science fiction. It's great stuff, but here he's assuming that this is the way it is. But no, it didn't. But then my point is, this really is indoctrination. And people read it and they say, oh, it makes sense. And now when you're in school, who wants to go against the teacher and get a C like I did? Well, I'm not going to say that we didn't descend from a monkey. Okay? And because that's popular right now. And it's really becoming more and more popular. So all I'm saying is that when you have, sometimes those grandparents, ask the grandkids, no, we're involved. You still have children, perhaps. And they ask your opinion, perhaps. But you see the stuff, and I know when you're around your kids, you got to be careful what you say and do. But boy, I tell you, my grandkids now range from 1 year to 5 years. But when they get up older, they want to come to some call me Pika, because they Pika a lot. Because the grandpa Pika, and they want all the stuff. But I'll give it to them. But they're really going to be the scum of the pick for their school if they use the stuff I give them. And because science is that. Science is scientific method. Science is confirmation. And sometimes it takes years to do that. And theories are good. Theories still are stuff. And so, but this business of Darwin, he's a great scientist. He's done a lot of things that are very good. But the point, I came from the common answer, I just can't buy that. Any questions before we close? Anything at all? Any questions? No questions? Really? So you all understand this. You're always kind of shaking your heads here, like, oh, the grammar is supposed to be an easy Bible class. Yes, sir.
I'm not smart enough to talk to science, but real quickly about the process that we're going through, the age we're living in, it seems like we should worry about scientists that don't understand that ultimately what they're doing is exploring God. And we should also worry about theologians who don't understand if there's a role for the scientific method in this whole process. Sure. Where is that dialogue happening today? Where do you see good stuff?
Well,
it can't be just within the Lutheran Church.
No.
So where are the first good stuff being done that we should read and learn from?
Probably the Creation Research Institute. California and other places, they have journals. You can go to genesis.org or Ken Hamill's doing stuff from Australia in this area. In the Lutheran Church, I would love to have a conference on this. It's hard to get it going. And where you invite people into that are intelligent design theorists, Darwin, and you really have a go at this. Frequently, and unfortunately, in the Lutheran Church, we tend to stick within our own kind instead of listening to what other people have to say in the field of science, the world. So that we can dialogue and debate these issues. So I would go to the CRI, Creation Research Institute Journal, and see what they're saying, because they present a lot of this. I mean, I can go into Barnes & Noble Wars and find what the evolutionists are saying. What are they saying about this thing here? I mean, I think people, when you see this, now, not a lot of people want to sit down and read this kind of stuff, but to have this for younger people around, just say, here, here's what they're saying you came from. Now here's an opportunity to teach. Here's what God says we came from. Now, and they're going to read this, and they're going to be making decisions and choices, but it's not complicated stuff to go in here and look at the words and say, probably this is almost, we're not sure, but this is the best we can do. And this is language that is not very scientific language. And can you duplicate this using the scientific method, say, in terms of reproducibility? Yes, sir.
Why do you think there's been such an explosion of junk science in the last 30 to 50 years or whatever?
The question is, why do I think there's been more explosion in this science in the last, say, 50 years or so? Now, this is coming from scientists' money. You need grants from NIH, National Science Foundation, NSF. I mean, a lot of people, you need this money. Doing the research, and there are more people out there digging. There are more archaeologists, Christian, and unbelievers. They're all digging. They're all digging all the stuff up. And the more people are digging, the more they're finding. See, and some is confirming what certainly the scriptures are talking about, and some have nothing to do with the Bible, like these bones they're finding of people, and they're human beings. I don't have a problem. So they found bones of a human being that's 3 feet tall. I have no problem with that. It's okay. But what I say, and I'm not an anthropologist, and there are many Christian anthropologists that refute everything that is in this magazine. So, and this, I think, is part of what happens, and it's good for science and theology, is that you do have people on both sides that are talking. And people are saying, well, the burden of proof is on those evolutionists to tell me I'm wrong. Burden of proof is an issue of probability of law. It means 51% of preponderance of evidence. Well, what's 51%? More bones? So they find something that convinces me I came from a monkey. I still am not going to budge away from the Bible. Anyone else?